I'm Shelley Schlender. This is For Your Health. One million American kids take medications to combat depression. Last month, federal regulators at the FDA announced that children who are on drugs such as Prozac, Paxil, and Zoloft are at a greater risk of suicide. While the FDA acknowledged that some children seem to be helped by these medications, they're looking at requiring stronger warnings about the potential risk of suicidal thoughts and behavior in children taking antidepressants. Next, we'll hear from Anne Blake Tracy, the head of drugawareness.org. Dr. Tracy wants these medications banned, but she believes that it takes care to get off of them.
Yes, the withdrawal stage can be very, very, very dangerous, and I warn about that. You go to our website at drugawareness.org, and you're going to see going right across the top of the page a ticker tape saying that withdrawal from these medications can be more dangerous than staying on them if you don't know what you're doing and how to come off.
Diet, exercise, cognitive talk therapy, and acupuncture are some of the non-drug therapies that may help with depression, as is aromatherapy. Our third expert today is Kathy Farmer, a master herbalist who says she helped her teenage daughter get off of Zoloft and out of psychiatric hospitals through the use of a therapeutic-grade essential oil called Joy.
We knew we weren't really communicating, and all of a sudden there was the awareness that we were truly communicating. And I can tell you from that moment on, and I'm sure it was a coincidence, an absolute coincidence, but from that moment on, they could not have considered her homicidal. Within 2 weeks after I received my own oils, they were able to release her from the hospital.
I'm Shelley Schlender. You're tuned to KGNU Boulder 88.5 FM, and this is For Your Health. Today, we're talking about antidepressants. Near the top of the hour, we'll hear from a world-renowned aromatherapist about why some essential oils may help people heal from depression. But first, let's talk with Anne Blake Tracy. Anne has a PhD in health sciences with an emphasis on psychology. She directs the International Coalition for Drug Awareness, and she's the author of Prozac, Panacea or Pandora. While Dr. Tracy doesn't use drugs such as Prozac, she does carry with her an antidepressant.
You want him to sing for you?
Sing, someone, sing, sing!
It's her pint-sized brown-eyed white chihuahua named Quito.
He is my antidepressant. We forget that there are many things in nature that will actually give us answers to many health problems. I mean, we know that just me petting Quito is enough to lower my blood pressure. That's why they use pets and pet therapy now. And I think it's long overdue for us to look at some of the many things that God gave us that work very, very well and don't have side effects.
Most mental health experts in the United States say that depression is basically a deficiency in the feel-good hormone serotonin. Modern antidepressants are designed to increase levels of serotonin in people, helping to brighten their moods. Depression probably involves some complex problems in serotonin metabolism. Anne Blake Tracy has some theories on why. They involve the possibility that some depression stems from an overdose of serotonin, often with tragic consequences. And like Tracy, what happened February 2nd at the FDA?
Well, the FDA convened an advisory committee to examine the potential adverse effects of antidepressants upon children, determine the safety of those drugs for children. So I, along with other physicians, attorneys, families of those who have had severe adverse effects, gathered together, and also children came to testify as to what happened to them.
What prompted this hearing by the FDA?
The prompting was brought on by the fact that the FDA in the United Kingdom have banned these drugs for the use of children this past year. They found medical studies done by the drug companies showing over a 3 times greater rate of suicide, psychosis, self-mutilation, violence, and medical damage done by these drugs when children take them.
Have there been studies available for people to that are available to the public indicating that there are problems with these medications, especially in teens and young adults?
Well, yes, there are many studies that have shown problems. There are studies that have shown that you can produce an LSD flashback and LSD effects with these drugs. Those have been out there for some time. But the newer studies on which the United Kingdom based their opinion, a lot of the studies are being withheld from the FDA. The drug companies are refusing to turn them over, to the point that Congress has stepped in. Some congressional people have come in and said, these need to be turned over, and they need to be turned over now. But the drug companies are claiming that they are trade secrets that should not be turned over to the FDA.
Now, a lot of people swear by these antidepressants, and there are many psychiatrists, psychologists, and other medical experts and patients who would say that these drugs save their lives and help them get stability in their lives.
Well, and that's what people have always said about drug use. Find somebody who's hooked on cocaine and they'll tell you the same thing. They take it so that they can perform better, and they do very well, and without it they can't perform. But we still don't consider that a good reason to be taking a drug if it is causing damage.
Could it be that some people benefit from these drugs and some people don't, and we haven't yet sorted out who are the right people to take them and who are not?
That may be, but when you look at the research that we have on the medical damage alone, that should be enough for everyone to be extremely concerned. It will cost this society an absolute fortune just to take care of those suffering from the medical damage as a result of these drugs. I very firmly believe that the extremely high rate of diabetes that we're now facing is a direct result of these SSRI antidepressants.
SSRI, what does that stand for?
SSRI is selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And they have a very, very strong effect on the pancreas and pancreatic function, which was my first concern with these drugs.
Could it be that there are other factors in our society that are tying in with the diabetes epidemic, for instance?
Well, that could be. But after hearing patient after patient after patient report that they had gone diabetic on these drugs and that they knew that there had to be a connection, I finally took a few minutes out of my schedule and decided to check the stats for the state of Utah. Utah consumes more antidepressants than any other state in the nation. We use double the national average in Utah. And when I check the stats for the state of Utah, diabetes is high there anyway, but our rate of diabetes, although it just had a gradual incline before Prozac hit the market, the year after Prozac had been out and the figures came in, the rate of diabetes absolutely skyrocketed. It shot straight up, and it's continued to go straight up ever since. To me, that was pretty clear.
It could be the drugs. It could be perhaps that some way that people are being treated seems to forget about some other way to solve diabetes.
Well, that's possible too, since memory loss is so strong with the use of antidepressants. It's probably the most common side effect that people report. But the cravings that they report for sugar.
Although the mainstream opinion in medicine is still that these antidepressants are basically one of the primary therapies that should be used for combating depression, even among teens in the United States.
Yes, that's true.
All right. Let's go ahead and hear more about what you think the mechanisms are that are involved in the side effects that may be taking place, especially among teens and young adults, that might increase the risk of suicide or homicidal behavior or other destructive behavior.
Well, what I saw right off and heard reported by so many patients was that they had acted out their worst nightmare. I heard that often enough that finally it triggered a response in me to begin checking the medical research. And I found a condition known as a REM sleep behavior disorder.
REM, that stands for?
REM sleep, your dream state of sleep.
Rapid eye movement.
Yes. And when I began to read the research on this, it was just identical to what these patients were reporting. This is a condition in which you act out nightmares, where there's no paralysis during sleep, allowing you to get up and act out your nightmare. 80% of those who go into a REM sleep behavior disorder hurt themselves or someone else in acting out the nightmare that they're having. And I was convinced that this is what was happening. And as you look at the research now, we find that 80% of the cases being diagnosed of REM sleep behavior disorder are patients on an SSRI antidepressant. Another 6% are on the older antidepressants. So a total of 86% of the cases we're seeing of this horrible disorder where you begin to act out nightmares are patients on these antidepressants. That should raise alarm anywhere.
Well, let's see. Most people, if they're having a nightmare, they just sleep through it. And it may
right.
be unpleasant. They may wake up with some scary memories, but their body isn't moving
That's
while
right.
they're sleeping.
Because they have the paralysis during sleep. But the high levels of serotonin that these drugs induce overstimulate the brain stem, removing the ability that we have to have paralysis during sleep. Possibly the most famous case that people would be aware of would be Phil Hartman's murder-suicide. Now, his wife had been on Zoloft 6 weeks before this tragedy happened. At 3 weeks, she began to report terrible side effects, and her physician had her cut the dose in half. Obviously, that was not enough for the severe toxic reaction she was having. She began to have the cravings for sweets and alcohol. See, the alcohol and the sweets run hand in hand with these cravings. And she had had a few drinks with some friends, came home, from all indications she had gone to bed, got up around 2 or 3 in the morning, got a gun, shot Phil, and then got in her car and drove to a friend's home and had them come back to tell her whether or not she had shot Phil, because she didn't know if she shot him or if she was having a nightmare. Now, it took them quite a while to even understand what she was asking them to do, because she threw up 3 times while she was there, which is an indication of serotonin syndrome, where the serotonin level's much too high. She also, her speech was extremely slurred, so that they really had problems understanding her.
She was drunk, too. She'd been drinking alcohol.
She had been drinking alcohol, yes. But it was more from the effects. Well, still, you combine the alcohol with the antidepressant, and you've got the toxic effect as well, because alcohol also will increase serotonin levels.
Had she had a history of drinking, or was the drinking brought
No.
on by her antidepressant, do you think?
No, she did not have a history of drinking. And anyway, when they came back to the house with her, they confirmed for her that she had indeed shot Phil. And as they walked into another room, she picked up the phone in the bedroom and in complete hysteria called her sister and said, "Oh my gosh, I've shot Phil. Why would I do that? He's done nothing to me. There's no reason for this. Why would I do this?" And she just could not understand what had happened. And she begged her, of course, to take care of the children and to tell them that Mommy didn't know what happened. And then she laid down next to Phil and shot herself. Just a horrific tragedy. Although the makers of Zoloft have settled the case, you still have two more orphans going through life without their parents who love them deeply.
Are you aware of other examples like that one?
Oh, hundreds and hundreds. So many. In fact, what triggered my curiosity in this case was I had just returned from Wyoming, where I had gone up to act as an expert witness in a case identical to this, where the nicest woman in town, which I hear over and over again, had taken a gun in the middle of the night and shot her husband while he slept. She said, "I remember standing at the top of the stairs with a smoking gun in my hands." She said, "I didn't remember ever pulling the trigger, but I figured I must have been the one who did it. So I walked over to the police department and turned myself in." So when I woke up the next morning after returning from that case and saw the reports on the Hartman family, I picked up the phone and I called the family and I said, "Don't you stop until you find one of these drugs. It will be there, and you have two children that need answers to this tragedy." And we did. I helped them all the way through, and we found all the evidence.
That she had been on this kind of medication, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk through what the mechanism is of why an SSRI drug is supposed to help against depression. What is the theory that leads millions of patients to take these medications for depression and countless doctors and other health experts to prescribe them?
Well, the theory behind the drugs was that serotonin levels are low in depression, and so what you need to do is increase the serotonin levels so that you will feel better. The truth is, what is low in depression is the ability to metabolize serotonin, not serotonin itself. And so when you lack the ability to break serotonin down and expel it from the system is when you're depressed, according to the medical research that has existed since the mid-50s.
All right, and Blake Tracy, let's hold on to this concept for a bit just to make sure we're clear on it. So you're saying that instead of being a deficiency of serotonin in most people who are depressed, it's a problem of the cells receiving the serotonin and using it properly.
Well, being able to expel it.
So both
it's
being able to...
blocking it in the brain.
All right. That's intriguing because some time ago in the medical profession, diabetes... type 2 diabetes was considered to be a deficiency of insulin. Mm-hmm. And over time, there's been a greater understanding that instead of it being a deficiency of insulin causing problems of sugar metabolism, in many cases, it's a problem that the body's pushing through plenty of insulin, but the cells have become resistant to its action because they're overwhelmed by the amount of insulin coming through, quite often because the amount of sugar coming through somebody's body is so high that the insulin level is high, and both of those things are stressing the whole system, and so the cells are saying, enough of this.
Right.
This stuff is poison to us. We can't accept anymore.
Right.
So there's a better understanding that with diabetes, there's a problem of insulin resistance as mm-hmm. opposed to too little insulin in the system. I kind of hear you saying the same thing may be going on with depression, that there's been some stress that's raised serotonin levels.
That's right.
Caused the cells to become resistant to the action of serotonin, and they're kind of overwhelmed by the stress. So the underlying problem is stress, not a deficiency of serotonin. just as in insulin, it's an underlying problem of too much sugar coming through, mm-hmm. not a deficiency of insulin.
And with these drugs, they're actually adding to the problem because they are impairing one's ability to metabolize serotonin, which was the initial problem to begin with. So even though an antidepressant is obviously a stimulant, because the opposite of a depressant is a stimulant, if it's an antidepressant, you're overstimulating the system. We know that what goes up must come down, and if something's down and you stimulate it, it's going to go up. But we learned a long time ago that that's not the way you treat depression. We used to give cocaine to people who suffered from depression. Ecstasy was prescribed until just 5 years before Prozac hit the market.
Now, Ann Blake Tracy, why was ecstasy prescribed for depression?
They were medications before. So we've made many mistakes in medicine.
Are those two now illegal drugs? Are they ways to increase serotonin levels in the body?
Both of those do, yes.
Oh, so they increase serotonin in a way that's similar to SSRI medications?
Yes. In fact, in the beginning, many doctors would not prescribe Prozac because of its cocaine-like qualities.
Now, just because something is similar to something else doesn't mean it's as bad. there is the adage that the poison is in the dose, that a lot of medications become medications as there becomes a finer way to understand how to provide something that's therapeutic without being harmful. I would suggest that that's the argument that most pharmaceutical companies would give for why something like Zoloft is much safer than giving cocaine for depression.
Well, I have learned that pharmaceutical companies can come up with just about any excuse you can think of if they think they can avoid a lawsuit by giving you that excuse. They are in trouble right now. I mean, with what's going on in the United Kingdom, what's happening at the FDA, and then just 5 days later in Eli Lilly's laboratory where they were testing the newest of these Prozac type of antidepressants, the Cymbalta, it's called duloxetine is the chemical name. They were testing it on healthy volunteers. 5 days later in their own laboratory, a 19-year-old girl already screened by them to be physically healthy and mentally healthy after taking this drug for 20 days and being off of it for 4, hung herself in the shower right under their noses. So in the past they've said, well, if these patients are monitored closely, you don't need to worry about it. Well, who could have been better monitored than somebody in a laboratory? And then also they have said it's the patient's underlying depression causing these suicides. They had already said this young girl had no depression. All of her friends will tell you she was upbeat, had always been upbeat, never a depressed person. So why did she hang herself?
That's a hard question and a painful one too.
Yes.
There's something I'm a bit confused about, though. We've been talking about antidepressants and how they may increase serotonin levels, mm-hmm. and that there may be hazards and side effects while taking an antidepressant. But you mentioned that this young woman had gotten off the antidepressant, and that's right. When she hanged herself. What would be your explanation for why that might happen?
Well, the horrible withdrawal that comes with these antidepressants. We mentioned the REM sleep behavior disorder before. That was in the past known mainly as a drug withdrawal state. But we've got these drugs now that are causing 80%, or that we're seeing 80% of the cases that are being diagnosed are patients on these drugs. So if in the past it was known as a drug withdrawal state, can you imagine how high it must be to suffer that REM sleep behavior disorder in withdrawal from these antidepressants that are that we see 80% of the cases being diagnosed is somebody on them already.
All right. So let me see if I've got this right.
Okay.
The problems with these medications in some people, the side effects can occur while they're on the medications because the high serotonin levels can cause side effects such as this REM sleep disorder.
Right.
And if somebody's taking off the medication,
So can the drugs are accumulating in the brain and the drugs are blocking the serotonin, so of course the serotonin would stay high. But I think that it's connected somehow with the effect serotonin and the drugs have on the blood sugar. That's my own personal belief.
So there's something about the fact that the serotonin levels are staying high, but the drug itself has been withdrawn that mm-hmm. makes it even a chancier time period than being on the drug itself.
Yes, the withdrawal stage can be very, very, very dangerous. And I warn about that. You go to our website at drugawareness.org and you're going to see going right across the top of the page a ticker tape saying that withdrawal from these medications can be more dangerous than staying on them if you don't know what you're doing and how to come off. It has to be very, very gradual. In fact, that's what Lilly just determined. They have doubled their withdrawal state now to where they're matching what I have said has been, for a long time, has been the safe way to come off of these drugs, taking about half the amount of time you were on the drug to wean off. It's the steroid effect that they have. Remember I said that one single dose of Prozac will double the cortisol level? Cortisol's the body's version of cortisone. And we learned through sad experience many years ago that in giving steroids that what you have to do is taper a patient up very, very slowly on a steroid, leave them on a very short time, and then taper them off extremely slowly on the other side. It's that steroid effect, and that's what we've got to learn with these drugs as well.
So these are hormones, and if the hormones suddenly spike up or down, a person's going to feel pretty bad.
Yes.
All right, so if someone has been on antidepressants for 6 months, you would suggest that they take 3 months to taper down?
Yes.
If they
very slowly. I mean, I have patients that try to cut chunks off of their pill, and it throws them into severe withdrawal. Patients have found that the easiest way to do it is take a fingernail file and start shaving the peel. You just tiny, tiny amounts off of that pill is the safest way that they've found to wean down off of these.
And if somebody's been on an antidepressant for 5 years, how long would it take them to pull back out of it safely, according to your research?
Well, the longer-term use patients seem to be able to take just like 5 years, maybe a little over a year, they've found is safe for them. So at least they're not having to take 2.5 years to wean off. But it's still very long-term withdrawal. And they have to work very hard at rebuilding their bodies to be able to handle the withdrawal. So yeah, most people are totally unaware that your main function of serotonin is constriction of smooth muscle tissue. 95% of it is found in the intestinal tract, where you need smooth muscle tissue being constricted.
And also our glands are made out of smooth muscles, our hearts,
yes,
our blood
right.
vessels
that's
are all
right.
made out of smooth muscles.
So when serotonin levels get too high, you die of multiple organ failure.
Boy, you know, we were talking about medicine, whether the poison is the dose. It sounds that way with our hormones too. If insulin levels are too high, that can be damaging to our bodies. And it sounds like serotonin too. If it's just right, it's perfect. It helps
right.
people feel good. Our cells don't become resistant to it. But if there's too much, our cells become resistant mm-hmm. and we feel kind of in trouble.
We're playing with our bodies and brains in ways we have no idea what we're doing. As Dr. Candace Pert said, who was one of the two discoverers of the serotonin binding process, who came out against these drugs 6 years ago, calling them monsters, that she's alarmed she ever had anything to do with their birth or development. Dr. Pert said, we're acting as if the body exists merely to carry the head around. They're connected. And if you disconnect them and try to treat only the head, you're going to end up with the same result as if you disconnect the head.
Now, Candace Pert, is she somebody who's alternative alone, or has she been in some fairly mainstream positions?
Dr. Pert was head of the brain chemistry department at the National Institute of Health for 13 years.
National Institute of Health,
that's,
and she
pretty
was head.
Mainstream.
So she was one of the people who helped understand the pathways that selective...
She discovered the pathways for the serotonin binding. And now she's alarmed at what is being done with that discovery.
Oh my, so she believes that we're overdosing ourselves on serotonin through these medications.
Yes.
All right, again, I want to emphasize that a lot of studies have said that one of the best ways to deal with depression is a combination of cognitive talk therapy and antidepressant medications, that is one of the best combinations. Many psychologists will tell me that it's very helpful to patients to have a therapeutic window provided by being on these medications for a short period of time while they're in therapy. And quite often people feel better, they can move ahead on solving problems, and they can taper back off these medications so that the medications have provided them a window of healing time. Mm-hmm. Could that be that for some people this works, and for some people there are side effects that mean it doesn't work?
No. And I say no because we've learned something in the last few years that should be shocking to the public. Dr. Marcia Engel, who was she was the editor for the New England Journal of Medicine until 3 years ago when she left. And as she left a seething editorial behind that I think steam is probably still rising from, saying that she could no longer be the editor of this journal because what she felt like she was an advertising agency for drug companies. And she exposed what has been going on in medicine, which she feels is going to destroy medicine as we know it. She said that medical studies are being ghostwritten by pharmaceutical companies who then go to doctors, have them sign these studies as if it was bona fide research, and then expect her to print them as if it was real medical research. We have information to show that almost 50% of medical research that we've been receiving over the last few years is ghostwritten, in other words, fraudulent. You know, for a long time, I had a gut feeling that that was going on, but until she actually come out and publicly stated that, I didn't know. I would tell people, if you really want to know the truth about serotonin, go back at least 10 years before these drugs hit the market and read everything you can about serotonin. And that's what I gathered to put into my book, so that people could see what we already knew about serotonin before it became financially lucrative for these drug companies to say the exact opposite. And this, I agree with Dr. Engel. This is very frightening that these things could be happening.
And Blake Tracy, there may be a possibility that that's true. And yet there may also be some very fine researchers who are independently studying these medications.
There are.
And finding that for their client population, they see some benefit, especially if they're used in connection with cognitive talk therapy.
Well, you know, we can talk about that all we want, but we need to remember that it was the missing arms and legs of the babies born to the mothers that took thalidomide that got that drug off the market and prevented it from coming and being approved on the market here in the United States. We've got to look at what they're calling the antidotes, because these are the missing arms and legs of the babies. All of these people who are dying, who are having these severe side effects, it is as valid as any clinical research. And we've got to look at that. Clinical research isn't what tells us really whether or not a drug should be pulled from the market. It's our own real-life laboratory that tells us that. How many have to die before we see that?
You'd like all of these medications off the market?
I would, because I've read enough research to see how extremely damaging they are to both the body and the brain.
All right, now...
Even if you get an initial high and feel good for a while.
But if we were to look at these medications and try to think, what could be the mechanisms for why they could have a potential to work? I mean, are there some things that we've been learning about which areas of the brain are stressed, which areas of the body are stressed, that might indicate why there would be some need for therapy? And maybe it could be an antidepressant, maybe it could be something with fewer side effects, but there may be a mechanism there that we're understanding better because of the research that's been done on pharmaceuticals.
Well, what I've seen with patients as I've worked with thousands of them over the years, when I go back through their history, what I see is a history in their family or even in their own life of diabetes or hypoglycemia, the blood sugar disorders. And your first symptom of hypoglycemia is depression. So why not change the patient's diet, change their lifestyle? And I've gone head-to-head on shows with leading psychiatrists that say, well, sure, we know that diet and exercise work, but if we write out a prescription for that, we don't know that the patient's going to follow it. But if we write out a prescription for a medication, we're pretty sure that they'll take it. Now, I don't think that that's fair to keep that from patients. Give them the option. At least let them know that they do have an option.
I'm Shelley Schlender. This is For Your Health. Today we're talking about antidepressants, and you've been listening to Anne Blake Tracy. Dr. Tracy directs the International Coalition for Drug Awareness. She's the author of Prozac, Panacea or Pandora. Dr. Tracy has an hour and a half long audio tape CD titled Help, I Can't Get Off My Antidepressant. She says it explains the safest withdrawal methods from these antidepressants and how to rebuild the body and the brain after the use of these drugs. You can find out more at her website, drugawareness.org. While many health experts and their clients say that antidepressants have been beneficial, a large number of people would prefer alternatives. Up next, we'll talk with Kathy Farmer, a world-renowned master herbalist who lives in Golden. Kathy says she helped her teenage daughter get off of Zoloft and out of psychiatric hospitals through the use of a therapeutic-grade essential oil called Joy. How could a pleasant smell affect depression? Kathy Farmer says it involves how therapeutic-grade oils affect key centers of the brain.
There was one study in New York University, Dr. Ledoux, showed that the amygdala gland was this gland that's only job is to store and release emotional trauma in the physical body, and discovered that no sound, no touch, nothing stimulated this gland to release trauma except the sense of smell. So I think that in and of itself is pretty significant. And then there's another study that was done which did the, I think they were PET scans, but they were showing the circulation in the brain of clinically depressed patients by comparison to those that were not clinically depressed. And they found that the amygdala gland had double the blood flow in a clinically depressed person over someone who was not clinically depressed.
All right, so the amygdala is located, if we were to point to the base of our heads.
It's going to be located right behind the olfactory bulb.
Oh, really? So
yes.
It's up there high.
Yes.
It's a primitive part of the brain, but it's right there next to the olfactory bulb.
It's right near the pineal and pituitary.
And it's a part of the brain.
It's a separate gland, but yes, it's directly in front of the brain, right above the olfactory bulb. And this little gland's only job is to store and release emotional trauma in the body. Now, in a clinically depressed person, what they're saying is that it's showing this additional blood flow, that every single event in this person's life is being registered as trauma. So the toaster didn't pop up at the right time. They may register it as trauma. So it goes beyond just constantly having a stress pattern, but that everything in life becomes doubly, triply stressful. Maybe some of the reasons why we have such profound effects with essential oils, because when we smell an essential oil, it immediately affects the amygdala gland. Remember, the amygdala gland was only stimulated to release trauma, to relax, basically, to let the stuff go with the sense of smell.
Kathy Farmer, are you saying that the amygdala is kind of the place in the body which says, it's okay, you can rest again, or we've got to be ready, danger is a moment away?
Amygdala gland, yeah, but it does. It's like the filing cabinet for the traumas in our life. And it's the guardian, and it says, okay, we're going to hold on to this trauma forever. We're going to do Dr. Ledoux showed is that voice therapy did not allow the release of that, but fragrance did.
Hold on to the trauma forever is what can happen if treatment doesn't work.
Exactly.
But if treatment works, then does the amygdala relax?
The amygdala will allow the release of that, yes.
Kathy Farmer prefers therapeutic-grade essential oils that are pure and have no additives. For instance, the essential oil rose comes from the natural oil in rose petals. She says its therapeutic effects are much more powerful than a rose perfume. The science of aromas is fascinating, but just as compelling for Kathy are personal accounts, including her own story of how an aroma blend called Joy helped her daughter heal from mental illness. Kathy Farmer.
I have a daughter that today is 24, but when she was 13, she was diagnosed bipolar. In fact, the diagnosis came down the same day they arrested her for assault, for bringing a poor kid to the ground, because she had the misfortune to decide to pick a fight with my daughter, and being 35 pounds younger, lighter than my daughter. So when she hit her, my daughter basically put her down to the ground and hurt her pretty badly. And at that particular time when she was diagnosed, we were at wit's end. I was teaching a classes called Silva Mind Control, so I was teaching people how to get greater awareness and use meditation for balancing, and I'm a master herbalist, and I was helping people balance with herbs. And here I had a daughter that wouldn't listen to anything I said, and of course that was so unusual. I mean, I know everyone out there, we don't know of any teenagers that don't listen to their parents. But anyway, during this time frame, she wasn't listening to me, and the things were getting worse and worse. They tried her on lithium. It didn't help. In fact, she started having hallucinations. They quickly switched to Tegretol and finally added Haldol to it. And within 30 days after her diagnosis, they hospitalized her. They tried her on all different types of medications. The best they could do was put her to sleep, but they could never get her temporotic under control. And right around the time that I heard something about essential oils, she was then on three different medications. She was on Tegretol, Stelazine, and Zoloft. Even under these three medications, she was still tearing things off walls. And to this day, her voice is very, very deep because she screamed for hours and hours on end. The nurses at the mental hospital, because she was at Fort Logan Mental Hospital, the nurses at the mental hospital said they had never seen anybody that could scream as long as she did and still had her voice. So anyway, this was the time frame that somebody said there's a company called Young Living that has essential oils that you might have an interest in. And I had looked at essential oils, quite frankly, having been a master herbalist, and I was not impressed with what I had seen. And I was not overly enthralled about this class, but they said there were something unique about the blends and the person that had put the blends together, that he was really an expert in blending, and the quality was beyond. And they suggested that I go to the class, and I took my last, basically my last $35 at the time, because I'm sure people out there that have sick children realize that your funds disappear. And I went to this class and was all set, ready to go, and discovered that I was going to have my daughter home for that 24 hours that the class was. And since I was unable to find anyone else to watch her, I ended up having to take her with me to this class. And my daughter was a very disruptive person during this time frame, and I just kind of figured she'd probably make noise and I'd have to leave. But fortunately, she was quiet. She did sit in the corner with a shirt over her head, but as long as she was quiet, I was fine. And afterwards, we went up and we started smelling. She had a woman had a case similar to mine. I have a briefcase here with the oils in it. She had a briefcase as well. And we went up and smelled some of the oils. And my daughter made some really negative comments about the fragrances of the oils, being a negative person. And we finally got into an oil blend called Joy. Victor, I'll let you smell that one. She smelled this oil blend called Joy, and she said this glowing comment of that it's not too bad. And Joy has a combination of oils, including ylang ylang in it. Ylang ylang brings about a sense of balance. It also helps balance the endocrine system, helps balance the heart and circulation. It has rose in it. Rose brings a feeling of contentment to the heart, a feeling of self-love. So this is and it has citrus in it, and citrus has a feeling, bring a feeling of joy to the heart. That's one reason why they called the blend Joy. And she said, that doesn't smell too bad. I mean, basically, that was the best we got out of her. I spent $2 for a little terracotta pot. The woman took pity on my daughter and gave her 10 drops of Joy on the terracotta pot, and we left. And as I'm walking out to the car and getting ready to unlock the car, have you ever had those experiences where all of a sudden you realize something very, very significant has happened in your life? As I'm unlocking the car, all of a sudden I realize I'm having a conversation with my daughter. Up until that point, for the 2-3 years that she'd been ill, it was as though we were talking on two different planes. There was no real communication. I'd say some words, she'd say some words, but we knew we weren't really communicating. And all of a sudden, there was the awareness that we were truly communicating. And I can tell you from that moment on, and I'm sure it was a coincidence, an absolute coincidence, but from that moment on, they could not have considered her homicidal. Within 2 weeks after I received my own oils, they were able to release her from the hospital. And within a couple weeks after that, we had taken her off Zoloft first. They tried to accuse us of child neglect, so we had to back off on the Stelazine and Tegretol. Fortunately, she was over 14 by this time. And about 8 months later, she was strong enough to tell the psychiatrist she wasn't going to take them anymore. And he says, I strongly advise not to come off these things. And she said, well, I stopped taking them 3 weeks ago. And we were both shocked. We had not realized that she had stopped. She was doing so well. We had been diffusing Joy in her room 24/7. And we didn't always have the diffuser full of oil, but we always had the diffuser running.
That's like a humidifier?
It breaks down the oil to almost a fog. And so there was this constant fragrance and this constant noise, too. For my daughter, that was very peaceful to have this constant white noise. She talks about it today. By the way, she's 24 today. She's a massage therapist. She specializes in emotional type of massage. She feels that the joy helped her feel like she wanted to be well. Her name of her business is called Ray of Light Aromatherapy Massage because her name is Ray.
Did she do some other things? Did she change her diet? Did she start to change her sleep patterns?
Well, what had happened with her, I think that started part of the biggest problem, is that we were pretty healthy eaters all the time she was growing up until she went into junior high. And then we had these hormonal imbalances that happened during that time frame at 13, and we also had the food patterns that they would eat in junior high. So one of the things she did do when we got out of the hospital, she did become quite rigid in what she ate, and she actually was vegan for quite a while and stayed vegetarian for even longer and was very specific about her supplements and so on. But all the extra stuff did not happen till more than a year later because she almost had to gain that strength. The only thing she really did at the beginning were the oils.
It could have been a miracle.
I'm sure it was just a coincidence. But then again, what's the definition of coincidence? God's way of being anonymous, you know. there were a variety of different factors. But today she's quite clear on staying away from sugars and so on.
All right. And if we dissect that moment from a skeptical point of view, this tied in with pleasing her. This was tying in somehow with that wonderful placebo effect that actually is one of the strongest powers in medicine.
Definitely all those different factors. But one of the things that came to me several years later, remember the movie Nell? It was a movie about this woman who had been raised with a grandmother that had already had a stroke, so she did not speak well. But she was a baby and not exposed to any other speech from the time she was very, very young. So when they found her, when she was 12, 13, 14, somewhere around there, she could not speak correctly, even though they tried over and over again. And they were starting to talk during this time frame about your child's mind or your baby's brain. In fact, both Time and Newsweek had articles about this. And they talked about these little islands of cells in the brain and that they needed to be stimulated to connect, to develop emotionally, to develop speech, to develop, to play a musical instrument or learn a foreign language, all these different things. Well, when I looked at my daughter, when all the science started coming up, I realized one of the things that had happened with my daughter is that I was very ill when she was a baby. From the time she was 6 months old to about 18 months old, I was quite ill. And in fact, went in the hospital two different times. Also, during the time between the two hospitalizations, I was sick in my bed. We could not afford help. I'd crawl to her bed, change her diaper, and crawl back to mine. It was a very difficult time. Well, the time frame, that window of opportunity that develops emotional development is between the age of 2 months to 2 years. Now, what I think the oils did, what my suspicion is, and again, there's no proof, I just have suspicion. My suspicion is it somehow opened those windows. It wasn't just, you know, she went from one stage to a next stage. It was like she became a different person. And that's my suspicion.
Do you think it also made a difference that you were there hoping that you would connect with her?
I'll be real honest. I don't know that I had any hope left. We used to call her Taz when she wasn't around. I mean, there... You know, you get to a point. I went into the grocery store one day. She was in the car, came back out. She'd broken the windshield of the car. She just put her foot against the window and pushed. But that was also during the time frame she was already eating the foods that she shouldn't eat and throwing her lunch away and, you know, or trading things at school. And so there were a variety of things that I think set it off.
Do you think that it's a surefire thing that joy would help everyone, or was it more that this is the one that she liked?
I believe everybody's an individual, and she's the one that chose joy. Now, joy is certainly one I suggest people experiment with, but they'll probably find someone that I may not even care for that type of thing, that they're going to say that that's perfect for them. But each fragrance has memories with us. A Christmas spirit is one that I found people really respond to. But, you know, Christmas spirit brings about if we had great, happy Christmases and a family that made us feel secure, that fragrance will make those same types of feelings. You know, we store memories stronger with scent than anything else. So if we bring back something that reminds us of a time where we did feel secure and we did feel loved, even if our life seems totally turned upside down right now, and we smell that particular oil and it bring back that fragrance of security and warmth and love and family, well, gosh, we're going to bring back that emotion as well.
I'm Shelley Schlender. This is For Your Health. For more about Ann Blake Tracy, check her website, www.drugawareness.org. For Kathy Farmer, call 303-989-0082. That's 303-989-0082. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Sunday at noon here on KGNU. Questions or comments? Call the KGNU comment line, 303-447-9911.